Hello there, and welcome to The Bitch Fix, a podcast for women who want to jam out on their lives, live in harmony with their hormones, and reclaim their mood, energy, and mojo. I'm Christine McCarroll, functional nutritionist and women's health straight talker, and I'm here to tell it like it is on all things health, happiness, and hormones for women. So shake off that cape, Superwoman, because we're here to launch this thing. Well, hey, girl, and welcome to episode 116 of The Bitch Fix. So before we get started, I just wanted to give you guys a quick reminder about the Midlife Metabolic Makeover Masterclass that's going to be happening on Thursday this week. So hopefully you have already put this in your brain because I've been talking about it for a couple of weeks and I even had the special announcement last week. But just in case you needed this extra little kick in the pants and reminder, that is going to be happening on Thursday. We are going to be talking all about metabolism, what happens to it when we hit midlife, and what we might want to do about it to hit the reset button to make that over in midlife. So there will be a link in the show notes to be able to sign up for that. But it is a free class. And I'll just tell you, it's also midlifemetabolicmakeover.com. That's midlifemetabolicmakeover.com. And you can sign up for the class. And I have had a couple of questions about this. There will be a recording for everyone who signs up that will go out and then be available through the weekend. So if you were wanting to do it, but it wasn't the right time for you, you will be able to get a recording. And like I said, the recording will be up for the weekend. So hopefully that answers that question. All right, you guys. So today's topic is actually somewhat related to our metabolism course, but it also could, I think, apply to almost any woman at different points in her life. So just about everybody that I've ever talked to has at some point experienced or been through stress eating. And for some people, this isn't a big part of their life or journey. It's a thing that pops up every once in a while. And for other people, it's a really big issue and it comes up quite a lot and it could feel out of control or like there isn't any way to get a handle on it. And so I wanted to talk about it today and I wanted to break it down a little bit and make it a little bit easier to understand kind of what's going on there and what some strategies are that I recommend for my clients who are experiencing this. So if we're thinking about stress eating, I really break this down into two parts, which is pretty obviously, I think, the stress part and the eating part. And you might be surprised to hear that I think the stress part is the most important part. And it's where we're going to be spending the most time in our conversation today. And that is because it is the reason why you are eating in the first place. So you know that my philosophy is always to ask why. This is like my driving question every single day. I'm like the annoying child who will not stop asking why, right? So it's like, if there's an answer to something, then I'm going to ask why. And the next answer we have, I'm going to ask why. And this is how we actually get down to root causes. And usually I'm using that in terms of physiology. So why is something happening in the body? But 100% this also applies to psychology. So why are we doing certain behaviors? What is driving us? What is the mindset that is creating this? And so that why you're eating in the first place when you're stress eating is actually the root cause, and that is what is driving everything, and that is really what we need to be addressing. So the first thing I want to say about this is that it's a totally understandable, natural human response that when we are experiencing stress, we are going to be looking for ways to handle and manage that stress. That is just what we do as humans. And so if you're doing it on default, if you feel a stressor and then you default to a certain behavior, that is, again, just natural and understandable because that's how humans work. That's how our brains work. But if you go on default, if you go to a default action, you're also going to get a default result. And that is where usually people are unhappy. They're unhappy with the default results that they're getting because nobody goes and stress eats cucumbers, right? Or celery. That is not what happens. We do not do that. And so usually the kinds of foods that we're choosing when we're stress eating are junk food, right? They're cake, candy, baked goods, usually oftentimes some sort of sugar, some other kind of stimulant, even something like coffee. But it's nothing that is going to be really nutrient dense and like supporting your body's health when we're stress eating, right? Nobody's going to like stress eat some white fish and broccoli, I'm pretty sure. So when you go on default and you're doing a default action, you're doing a default behavior, then we get those default results, which is things like jacked up blood sugar, jacked up hormones, maybe some unwanted pounds coming on, feeling unwell, just like not feeling good, feeling like you are brain foggy or tired. Like there's all of these results that we don't like. And that's usually why we consider this a problem, is not because of the thing itself, but because of the results that it's driving. So the reason why we do this, so I first want to just unpack like what is driving us and what's in our brains that is creating this. And what's creating it is there are two parts of it. The first part is we learn at some point that the thing that we want to do feels good, right? So if let's say you are eating a candy bar or you're eating a pizza, at some point you did that behavior, you ate a pizza or you ate a candy bar and it felt good, right? It lit up a whole bunch of stuff in your brain. It sent your blood sugar up, probably gave you a little spike of energy, gave you the pleasure sensation of the taste. So your brain put together, okay, I do this thing and I feel good, or it tastes good, or there's something pleasurable about this in the short term, right? And so we put together that association because our brains are really smart and we put things together really fast. So we go, okay, I go and eat cookies and I feel good. So we might be getting some of that hit from the sugar. We might also be getting kind of that, again, that kind of energy spike or rush from the from the actual sugar itself, right? So we're getting a little blood sugar rush. It's again, just things taste good. That is hitting our reward centers, our pleasure centers in our brains. And usually it's that short-term response that we remember. So we remember that that tasted good, or, you know, that we got that little hit of energy or whatever. So of course, our brains remember things that are intense. So we remember pain and we remember pleasure. So if you had ever, like, let's say, burned your hand on a hot stove, you're probably going to remember that. Like every time you go to the stove, even if it's not like, you know, pure panic, you're going to remember. One of my daughters, when she was younger, was learning to cook and she burned the side of her arm, and she was really little. She was like, I want to say 6 or 7. And all she was doing, she was reaching over one pot and trying to put an ingredient into another pot. And she burned her arm on the first pot. And it was a pretty bad burn, you guys. Like I was horrified. I have a strong memory of this. It was probably like a second degree burn. And so it was very stressful for everyone. Well, it took her a really long time to feel comfortable in the kitchen. And then even when she was comfortable doing things like helping me chop or prepare something, she really had a big fear about getting near the oven and the stove. And it took a lot of repeated exposure before she got comfortable with that again, right? So we are always going to remember things that are painful. And then we're going to remember pleasure too, right? So that's another part of our human brains. We remember when things feel good, they taste good, they are rewarding to us. So we're going to seek out pleasure-producing behaviors, and we are going to avoid pain-producing behaviors. Like that's pretty obvious. You can see that in any animal, any like pet that you have. They're going to go for the things that feel good, and they're going to avoid the things that don't. Like we are animals too, and this is how it applies for all of us. So your brain remembers that. And so if you get into a state of experiencing stress or anxiety or really any other negative emotion, what is your brain going to want to do? Your brain is not going to want to stay in pain, right? Your brain is going to want to get out of that pain as quickly as possible. And one of the ways that your brain is going to come up with is, hey, I remember this thing that felt good. So I'm going to go do the thing that feels good so that I can avoid feeling this thing that feels terrible. So if you feel anxious or stressed, so let's say you got a nasty note from your boss and you're feeling anxious, your very smart brain is like, this is pain. this is not good. This is uncomfortable. I want to get out of this. I know when I eat cookies, that gives me that pleasure hit. So even if you know that eating cookies an hour after you ate them, if you like binged on a box of cookies, maybe an hour later, that doesn't feel good. In the moment, your reptile brain, your just like instinct brain is going to be taking over. You are not going to be accessing all of those smart parts of your brain that know that that isn't a good choice, right? So you're going straight into default mode. So anytime we're in fear, pain, anything like that, we go straight into default. We go into the reptile brain. We go into our knee-jerk reaction. We go into our default responses. We cut off the access our brain has to the smarter thinking parts of our brain. So you're going to be cut off from the smart thinking part of your brain that's like, yeah, you felt really crappy the last time you ate all the cookies. All your brain is going to be remembering is, this is pain. I want to get into a better state. And I remember pleasure came from that, from those cookies. So very smart brain. And you can totally have compassion and understanding for yourself if this is the pattern for you. But if your very smart brain is like, this is terrible. I want to get out of it. You're going to think about what's the pleasure thing. And this is all going to be happening below the level of consciousness, right? Like you're not aware of these thoughts. You're not aware of, huh, this thing sucks. Let me go do the thing that feels better. You're just like, how did I even find myself in front of the pantry? Or probably even more like that, or more likely is you're going to be like, how did I find myself halfway through the cookie box? How did I find myself having eaten everything? And you're like, wait, what? How did this even happen? Right. And it's because your brain went directly to the automatic response. And the automatic response was the whatever the thing was that you thought was going to, or your body thought was going to relieve that stress. So that is why you go on to default. There is something uncomfortable. You don't want to experience it, understandably, naturally, and you're looking for something that's going to feel better instead. So how do we deal with this? Just knowing that this is the pattern, I think actually this is like the preamble, right? Like that actually, sometimes that knowledge enough is enough to help some people where they know, okay, I have triggers. Once I feel triggered, I go do this thing. And then this is the default response. So sometimes just that awareness is enough to shift that a little bit. But for those of us where it's not, I want to give you three strategies for handling this situation when it comes up. So just knowing that it is natural, knowing that it is human, knowing that we have a, you know, kind of a reason for this in our brains why we're doing it, then we can figure out what we can do instead. So the first thing to do, or the first kind of strategy I would say is to interrupt your pattern, right? So this could even be something like, you know, you don't keep the cookies in the house, which I know is like old hat advice. But if you are keeping something in the house that you know is like your trigger, put it somewhere else, put it in a different place, put the cookies in with your, I don't know, your maxi pads, put it someplace where it is just totally not where your habit is. And the reason for that is that you are going to interrupt the pattern. So I kind of gave you that example of like, you just find yourself in front of the pantry, like you don't even know why, right? It's my kids do this. They come home from school, they directly go to the pantry, they're looking for a snack. And it's just a pattern, right? And we can have good patterns, we can have not so good patterns. I have a pattern of drinking a glass of water every morning. So that's a good pattern. And I've joked with my clients that there's probably a trail worn in the carpet from my bedroom to the water filter, because that's what I do every morning. Like I wake up, I go to the bathroom, I go get my glass of water. Like every single morning, that's the habit. And so there's probably like a path worn in my house on the floor between my bedroom and the water filter. So if I all of a sudden put the water filter on the back porch, my brain would have to register that, right? When I would have to go get my water, it'd be like, oh, wait, I was going to the place where it used to be, but now it's on the back porch. Same thing if you have some sort of you know, your trigger food, your whatever thing that is, you're like, okay, I always go to this thing when I'm stressed. If you just put it somewhere else, you're interrupting the pattern. So put it somewhere else, put it out of reach, do something that's going to create an interruption so that you have a minute to do step number two. So the second thing is asking yourself what it is that you really need and just checking in with yourself on an emotional level. So again, when we are in default, where we usually are is not centered into ourselves and centered into our bodies. So even just taking a minute before even asking that question, to become aware of your five senses. So become aware of what am I seeing? What am I hearing? What am I smelling? What do I feel sensation-wise in my body? If you're feeling stressed, if you're feeling anxious, how is that sensation experienced in your body? Are you feeling like a buzzy feeling throughout your body? Are you feeling a heavy weight in your chest? Are you feeling like a lump in your throat? Are you feeling hot prickles across your back? Like, what is the physical sensation that you are experiencing? So ask yourself first, what is my sensation? How am I experiencing this? And then ask yourself, what is it that I actually need right now? And this is a really powerful question, because what your brain is defaulting to isn't really a need. It's like a knee-jerk get out of pain, pleasure response, but it's not really addressing whatever that underlying need is, right? So if you're feeling anxious, like, why are you feeling anxious and what is it that you need? So there are usually about 100 different needs that we might have, but it might be something like, I really need to be gentle with myself, or I really need a hug. I really need to call a friend. I need to call my mom. What do I need? A human connection. I need some stress relief. I need to have a handle on my schedule. Like, what is the thing that you need? And once you know what you need, ask if it's possible, asking yourself if it's possible to meet that need another way. So if what you're feeling is lonely, and then you might say, well, how might I meet that need? I might meet it by calling my friend. I might meet it by texting my mom. I might meet it by snuggling with my dog, right? How could I meet that need that I have? Or that, what is the thing that I'm feeling right now that I'm wanting or needing? So if you just ask yourself, hey, what do you want? What do you need? And then is there a different way to meet that need? And see if you can. See if there is a way that you could meet that need without going to disconnecting from yourself and just going into some mindless sensation, right? So is there a way to meet your own need? And then the last thing is actually the most sophisticated. So I would say when you're trying to just shift this as a habit for yourself or a pattern, you want to try the first two things first. You want to interrupt the pattern. You want to ask yourself what it is that you really need and see if it's possible to meet that need another way. But the third thing is that you want to increase your capacity to experience negative emotions. So how can you be with yourself in this experience of something that doesn't feel good? So most of us, because we have so many ways to distract ourselves now in our modern world, we have about 1,000 different things at our fingertips, right? So some people use alcohol. Some people use social media. Some people use overworking. Some people use busyness. Some people use food. We all have these ways of escaping from the feeling of the negative emotion. And that escape hatch will work in the moment, but it isn't actually going to do anything about that underlying feeling. So the better we can get at actually staying put and being with ourselves in that negative emotion, the more we can expand that capacity, the less control external circumstances are going to have on us, the less we are going to feel the stress that's going to drive us to go do the stress eating, because we are going to have a tolerance level, right? So if you feel intolerant of your own feelings, your own emotions, your own thoughts, you are not going to want to be with them. You're going to look for your escape hatch. So your ability to experience those feelings is going to increase your capacity to not head for something else. And this could be true with any habit that you have that is a habit created for an escape hatch. So it could be smoking or drinking or any of the things I just said, social media, overwork. Whenever we're like looking for an escape hatch from our feelings, you don't have to judge that. You don't have to judge yourself for doing that because you are a human. But what you can do is say, okay, I'm clearly trying to avoid something. What am I trying to avoid? And could I be with myself for just a minute with that uncomfortable thing? So the way that you build this up is not all at once. You don't build this up over, you know, this habit that you've built over your lifetime. You don't build up your avoidance you're coming back to being with yourself when you've been avoiding it for decades, you come back a little at a time. So a lot of people avoid their feelings because they are worried that once they get into that emotional state, they won't be able to get out, that those feelings are going to overwhelm them, that they are going to be down in this quagmire of negative emotion. That's why we go to the things that are the quick and easy escape, because we are so terrified that we couldn't be with those feelings. So I think the way that we show ourselves this capacity is just a tiny bit at a time. And you can even set an alarm clock. So maybe you just set your alarm for 1 minute or even 30 seconds. And you just say, I'm going to take 30 seconds and I'm just going to sit down. And for those 30 seconds, I'm going to allow myself to feel terrible. I'm going to feel this really terrible feeling that I'm feeling. Maybe I'm feeling fear or worry or even anger or disgust or disappointment or sadness or whatever it is. I'm going to just fully let myself experience that, like fully in my body for 30 seconds, and set your timer and let it be there. And then after 30 seconds, you can do whatever you want. You could decide that you're going to meet your need in another way. You could even decide that you're going to go do the thing you were going to do already. You're going to, you know, go stress eat, or you were going to go stress scroll social media or whatever. But you are, you're starting to exercise that capacity. So just like you would never just go to the gym. And if you hadn't worked out in 2 years, you wouldn't try and like start doing, bicep curls with a 50-pound weight. You're not going to like try and do that to yourself either. You're not going to be like, let me just white knuckle this and I will just not do the thing ever again. But when you start to create that space and you start to pick up the weight of increasing your capacity, you will start to build up that tolerance. So maybe you start with 30 seconds, and every time you have that kind of knee-jerk response, you give yourself 30 seconds. And then after a little while, you give yourself a minute. And then after another little while, you give yourself 2 minutes, and then 5 minutes, and you gradually increase that. What you will notice is that after you give yourself a little bit of time, it's not even that long, you guys. If you give yourself even 2 or 3 minutes, what you will see is that emotions, they are in motion, right? Like there is the reason why that word motion is in there. And it's because they come on strong, you feel them intensely, and then they keep moving. So it's very rare that you're just going to stay in any state, positive or negative, for some huge expanded period of time. Nobody also feels elation for huge amounts of time, right? Like even if you think about your happiest days or moments of pure joy, you can remember that, but it wasn't like it just stayed with you for days and days and days. I think that's another great thing to play with, is your capacity to experience joy. But just recognizing that all feelings, all emotions are like the weather. They come in, there's a big rainstorm for a while, maybe there's some hail, maybe it snows, whatever it is, it comes in, but it keeps moving. And so our emotions are like that too. And the longer that we practice experiencing that thing that's driving us, the better that we are able to be with ourselves, the more we can just see that it's passing. And then the less likely we are to be afraid that we can't handle it. And then therefore, the less likely we are to act in ways that are going to buffer that experience. So we're not looking for the escape hatch, because there's no need to escape, because we know it's going to move on through, right? So those are your 3 steps. Your first step is to interrupt your pattern. Once you get good at that, the second step is to ask yourself what you really need, see if it's possible to meet that need another way. And then your more advanced step, as you get better at those other two, is to start increasing your capacity to be with unpleasant emotions, so that you don't feel like you need your escape hatch of the stress eating to be able to handle it. All right, you guys. So the tie-in that I wanted to have for you here, in general, with your hormones and with the class that I'm going to be teaching on Thursday, is we have these stress hormones, cortisol and adrenaline. I talk about cortisol being one of the 3 big dogs of hormone balance. I don't talk a lot about adrenaline. I think they're like sister products, I guess, of our bodies. But cortisol is that big dog. And so cortisol is, to me, one of the big levers of other things that are happening in our body. And so the more that we have experiences day to day of huge amounts of cortisol, cortisol is going to jack up the rest of your hormone system. It's going to pull really hard on things like your sex hormones, like estrogen and progesterone. It can also mess with your sleep. It can mess with your hunger hormones, like leptin and ghrelin. So if you're thinking that I'm actually really starving at this point, point, well, maybe there's a reason. Maybe it's that cortisol hormone that's jacking those other hormones up. It's also going to impair our ability to digest food and get the nutrients that we need from our food. And I talked a couple of weeks ago about thyroid hormone. Cortisol is going to interfere with the conversion of thyroid hormones. So we're less able to make our active, beneficial, helpful thyroid hormone from our inactive thyroid hormone. So the better we get, I'm looking at this symptom of stress eating, but the better we get at handling that, first of all, the better we're going to be at that actual experience that we're having, but we actually are going to be secretly helping out that big dog of cortisol. And we're going to be doing things like improving our periods and improving our sleep and improving our cravings and our hunger signaling. And even something like our ability to process our thyroid hormone. So there's some pretty wide-ranging effects, and that is not a stretch for me to say those things either. This is like biochemistry. That's how it works. All right, you guys. So that big dog, cortisol, is one of the things I'm going to be talking about on the masterclass on Thursday. So Midlife Metabolic Makeover coming to you on Thursday. We are going to be talking all about metabolism. We are going to be talking about how this stress hormone of cortisol is impacting our metabolism, along with a whole bunch of other things, why this is so important for us in midlife and what we can do about it. So I am going to, again, drop a link to the registration for that in the show notes. The recording is going to be available through the weekend, and I look forward to seeing you there. Have a great rest of your week and weekend, you guys, and I will see you next time. Hey, if you've been on the hormonal roller coaster and want to know how to put the theories and strategies shared on this podcast to work for your body, I want to invite you to join me in my program, The Bitch Fix in Six Steps to Happy Hormones. I'll help you heal your hormones naturally so you can get your mood, energy, and mojo back and live the badass life you were designed for. This is the work I've done with hundreds of women, and it can work for you too. To learn more, go to thebitchfixin6.com. I can't wait to meet you inside.